This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. And I am actually driving home today. It's Thursday morning. I just had breakfast with a buddy. And so I'm getting ready to drive back home now and do a little work for glue or for the Assemblies of God or for something, depending on how you look at it. Everything seems to be going fine there. We're still finding more and more uses for AI, although it's interesting because a lot of the guys have been very focused on using just Anthropic tools, even though there are other tools available. And at first, it was just kind of unlimited. We could use as much as we wanted, but you know, they're starting to kind of tighten the screws a little bit now to say, okay, let's keep this down to X number of dollars. But that's okay because the guys can drop back to other models. And for me, I've always had my instance of Cursor set to auto, which I think it's using Composer and Cursor's own model, Composer 2.4, 2.5, something like that, for that. And it's been just fine. No problems. One little bug that it introduced at one point, you know, we're good. So it's been working really well, and it's much, much, much cheaper than the Anthropic stuff. So I think, you know, it's going to be fascinating to watch all of these market pressures with chips and with models and with this, that, and the other, and businesses adopting, and it's, wow, what we are in for. I have no idea. Such a fascinating time. But all is well at work. We're puttering along. Trying to decide at this point where one of my little things that I was building for end of month, whether we're going to actually deploy that for end of month or whether we're just going to wait till the next month. We're a little tight on our days for end of month now because headquarters is only open 4 days a week. And so that's kind of just, we're still adjusting. They've been 4 days a week for a while, I think since the beginning of the year, but it's, when we're trying to plan out, I got a truck that may need to, like, get moved over. Are you going? Are you going? Go, go, go. So there was a truck in a left-hand turn lane that was trying to get into a right-hand turn lane and get through an intersection. So I'm sure you heard some people decided that they wanted to honk their horns a little bit, but okay, now I don't know what he's doing. There's like people that are lots of honking. It always amuses me when people are honking their horns. So like, what are you accomplishing by that? Anyways, the truck has turned. We're good. We're heading home. So yeah, it's fascinating. It's fascinating to watch. It's fascinating to see where we are. I have had to take a tact of saying, you know, look, I work for glue now. And so if glue doesn't give it to me to work on, I can't just jump in and help people. Because this is what headquarters wanted. So there we go. So that's good. The costumes are just kind of puttering along at this point. I have some repair work to do, and then I've got to start on the Halloween costume sometime soon. But, you know, there's nothing hugely pressing at that point. The big thing that happened this last week, and it was interesting to move through it, was that I have everything finished up, as far as I know, for the 24 book series Windfall that I've been working on for 12 years. It's done. Done and done. So have all the covers redesigned, have everything uploaded, read through, finished my read through on book 24, got all the files put together, got the Kindle put together and the EPUB and all that stuff. Uploaded all the files, everything's live. You know, I think it's good, and it's done. So, and, you know, my kind of overarching approach to that was, okay, got that done, moving on to the next thing. So, you know, sometimes we have kind of an expectation that there's going to be some big dramatic something when we've accomplished a task, and for me, it was something that I wanted to do. I'm really glad I did it. It was a great experience. I enjoyed doing it a lot. But I always knew that once I got to the end of it, then it would be done. And it's done. Yay! So I have started working on the first of three Still Whispers books that I'm going to do. So the Lord's Prayer, I've mentioned that before. It's going to be a little short book. And because I thought, oh, that'll be a good kind of palate cleanser, you know, just to work on something different for a while that's not science fiction and it's just very conversational. So I'm in the process of working on that now, and that seems to be going fine. Obviously, the idea of doing a book on the Lord's Prayer is definitely not original. It's been fun because I've started to do a little bit of research on some of this, just by way of the introductory material in the book. And, you know, sure enough, there are tons and tons of reflections and meditations on the Lord's Prayer. Rightly so, because it really is more than just a prayer. It is a framework. It is a map for living life. And that's how I'm going to be going after it. One of the things that's interesting is that as I was doing all this research, I came across something that I had completely forgotten. I was looking in my folder for Still Whispers, and there was a file in there called The Lord's Prayer, and at first I was a little confused. I was like, what? What? Wait. What is that? And so I double-clicked on it, and after I had written Still Whispers back when I turned 50, so that would have been 2008-ish. I had written a little treatment on the Lord's Prayer, just kind of an amplified version, that was very much focused on how the Lord's Prayer reflects then in daily life. And it's very similar to the idea of this book that I'm working on, and I'm going to include that in this book. But it was just interesting to see that even this idea of mapping the Lord's Prayer into daily living was something that I had been pondering and Jesus had been whispering to me years and years ago. So, you know, that was fascinating. The other thing that was fun is as I'm going through these introductory remarks, one of the things that I wanted to just introduce and cover and remind of is this idea that God is a narrative God, that God is a storyteller. And I specifically, in the book, bridge into that after talking about the fact that there are two versions of the Lord's Prayer. One is in Matthew, one is in Luke. In both cases, Jesus is giving instructions on how to pray. So the one in Matthew, of course, is on the Sermon on the Mount. And he talks about when you're praying, you know, don't march around and make a big show of it. But when you're praying, pray like this. And then he goes into what we, you know, would immediately recognize as the Lord's Prayer. But then in Luke 11, Jesus finishes praying one morning, and the disciples come to him and say, teach us how to pray. They ask him to teach us how to pray. And Jesus goes through some introductory remarks, and then he just says, pray like this. And it's an abbreviated, very terse, short version of the Lord's Prayer. Has all the same basic phraseology, but fewer words. And as I say in the book I'm writing, you know, was Jesus really intending to say, okay, so if you're going to learn to have a rich prayer life, all you have to do is just repeat these phrases and then you're done? And I think we can all say, well, no, that's not what God was intending. That God was intending, Jesus was intending, that these phrases become a foundation. They could become a story that we tell ourselves that then works out into every area of our life, including prayer. And so then that in the book leads me into the next chapter of talking about God as a storyteller. Because we may know this intuitively, but sometimes we don't always express it in this language, that God works in narrative ways. And we've talked about this before in the context of, why is there evil in the world? Why does God allow that? Because it makes a better story. You know, there has to be triumph, and there has to be something to triumph over, and struggle and accomplishment and overcoming. Those are all great stories, and God is a storyteller. Well, I knew the verse that followed a famous section talked about this, but not in the way that the translations give it to us. So obviously Ephesians 2, 8, and 9, for by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. We know those verses. But what we don't always pay attention to is the verse that that follows those verses that is completely in context with that verse, where Paul says, for we are his workmanship, created in Christ unto good works. Well, I had heard for a long time that that noun, workmanship, for we are his workmanship, had a much deeper meaning than you might get from just saying workmanship in English. And so I was going to look it up. I was going to do the Greek research and all that sort of thing. And I thought, you know what? Let's just try ChatGPT. And wouldn't you know that ChatGPT, it actually put together a surprisingly good word study on that. And it was a great devotional. So there you go. And I'm definitely going to borrow a bunch of pieces from that. But it was fascinating because it did go through the stuff that I was aware of, that workmanship, that word, is really more artistic than workmanship has a connotation of in English. You know, it's a creative endeavor. It is a poem. It is a masterpiece. It is something that an artisan is putting together. And Paul is saying there that you are the creative endeavor of God, that he is bringing about in our lives these creative manifestations. But then ChatGPT went on to note that I thought this was a great observation, that that particular word that is used there, that Paul only uses that in one other place, and I think it was in Romans, that he uses it to refer to creation. And so Paul is saying that not only we in our lives are creative endeavors of God, but this entire creation that he has made is a creative endeavor. You know, there's a narrative to it. There are stories to tell. It's a poem. It's this masterpiece that he has built and is building, that he is at work in all of these things. And, you know, I'm talking about that in the book to lay this foundation, to say that this is the standard modus operandi for God, that God is a creative God, and he's a narrative God, and he tells stories, and he teaches through everything that he does. And then I'm going to bridge that back into the fact of, okay, why did Jesus just give these terse phrases to his disciples when they ask him, teach us how to pray? He didn't give them a big theological treatise. He gave them this handful of very short sentences and thoughts. And then I'm going to use that as a springboard then to go in to say, you know, this Lord's Prayer really can function as a framework. And it's lovely that we have these short little phrases that we can memorize, because then as we move through life, we can call those to our mind and say, okay, in this situation, what phrase of the Lord's Prayer could be applied to this? And then how does that inform how I should react to these things that are happening in my life? And so it was just fun this morning. I didn't actually prepare any notes for today, but obviously this was the thing that was on my mind, because it was just fun this morning that I asked this ChatGPT thing to do a word study for me, and it does this really pretty good word study. You know, it's fascinating. These are fascinating times. But beyond it all, we just really, really need to remember that God is at work, that he is building stories, that he's shaping narratives, he is showing forth his glory, he is creating and refining and building a kingdom for his son. It really is amazing to be in this life and be participating with God, moving forward with him, learning of him, you know, finding our place in him and finding our fulfillment in the things that he plans and maps out for us to do. So it's good. So yeah, finished the big series this week. Worked on it for 12 years. I'm happy where we are. That's done. It's time to move on to the next thing. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it